Okay, good evening. Welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, Cinco de Mayo, May 5th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and help allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with particular emphasis on the COVID-19 pandemic. We have a special guest, Sheila Sund, MD, who will answer your questions via telephone. We're going to try a little audio patch here. Hopefully she'll be able to hear her as I key up. And see if we can get the audio level right here, but we're also going to try to make a recording of this available later on the WA7ABU groups.io page. All amateur operators are welcome to participate in the COVID-19 discussion during the net. We'll start with a short check-in period for the stations that would like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussion. If you would like to ask a question, let me know. After the check-in period, we'll have an introduction by the doctor. When you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's start with those users on EchoLink. Any EchoLink users for the emergency preparedness net, come now, please. Okay, no EchoLink users. Let's take regular check-ins for the net.
Kilo India 7, Sierra Oscar X-ray with a question.
W7 November Alpha Tango, no question.
Sierra Hotel November, Frank in Lebanon.
Kilo Foxtrot 6, Foxtrot Yankee Delta, Richard Salem, Oregon.
K6, your Tango X-ray.
Kilo Echo 7, Golf Bravo Kilo, John and Kaiser.
Good evening. This is Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Kilo Bravo 7, Foxtrot Charlie Hotel, Operator Charlie here in Albany.
Kilo 5, Charlie, Papa, Charlie, Mike, in Happy Valley.
November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, and November 7, Delta Kilo Bravo, Richard and Deborah in Albany.
Hi, Brett. Kilo Alpha 7, Juliet Lima Oscar, Jeff in Albany with the question.
Good evening, Whiskey 7, Mike Tango Lima, Craig in Gladstone.
Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Stephen Albany.
Alpha India 5, Hotel Foxtrot, Michael in Salem, along with Kilo Juliet 7, Charlie Mike Delta, Deidre, and Kilo Bravo 5, Kilo Zulu Zulu, Chris, all in Salem.
Let's pause just a second.
Oscar Thema Uniform, Paul in Forest Heights, Portland.
Okay, let's pause there for just a second. I got you there, Paul. I'm going to go work backwards, but there was a new call, and I don't know if I got it correct or not. So we'll just work backwards to say, so that was Paul, Kilo Echo 7, Oscar Lima Uniform, and then we had Mike and Deidre check in, then there was a third person I didn't get. So Mike was Alpha India 5, Hotel Foxtrot, Deidre was Kilo Juliet 7, Charlie Mike Delta, And then I think I heard Kilo Bravo 5, Kilo Zulu Zulu. Is that right? Could you come back again with the call and the name?
Roger, roger. That call is correct, and the name is Chris. Chris, over.
Okay, great. Let me go back through the list here. That's 20 calls. So bear with me here. We had Steve, Whiskey 7 Sierra Hotel Mike, Craig, Whiskey 7 Mike Tango Lima, Jeff, Kilo Alpha 7 Juliet Lima Oscar. He has a question. We had Richard and Deborah, November Whiskey 7 Oscar Romeo, and November 7 Delta Kilo Bravo. Mike checked in, Kilo 5 Charlie Papa Charlie, and Charlie checked in, Kilo Bravo 7 Foxtrot Charlie Hotel. Lots of Charlies there. At Art, Kilo Kilo 7 Alpha Romeo Tango. John checked in, Kilo Echo 7 Golf Bravo Kilo. Nate, Whiskey 7 November Alpha Tango. Dan, Kilo 6 Sierra Tango X-Ray. Richard, Kilo Foxtrot 6 Foxtrot Yankee Delta. Frank, Whiskey 7 Victor Hotel November. And Jay started us off, Kilo India 7 Sierra Oscar X-Ray. There we go. I think what we'll do is we'll take plenty of people right now to check in. I want to go ahead and introduce Sheila Sund, and we'll try to get to a quick sound check here and see if this sounds okay. And then I'll let her go ahead and do an introduction for you if we have the sound levels correct. So we're going to move over to Sheila. We're going to do a sound check real quick. Sheila, are you there? Go ahead.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Okay, so tell me when you push the button.
I'm pushing the button right now.
Okay, so if you guys can hear me, we'll try that. I want to talk first about kind of what's going to happen next as we social distancing standards decrease. So is everybody hearing this? That's the first question.
Okay, let's pause and check.
Let me shoot fine, W7NAT.
Okay, 7SOX, a little tinny, but it sounds very clear.
Okay, well, it's low tech, but we'll see if we can hear it here. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and let her do the introduction, and then we'll take your questions. Here you go. Here's Sheila.
Okay, well, if I'm looking at what's happening with COVID, the two things that keep coming to my mind are, first of all, obviously what's going to happen as things are relaxed with social distancing, both locally in Oregon and throughout the country. And the other part which ties into that is numbers and how the numbers that we're getting in the newspaper and from the government are increasingly unhelpful to us. So looking at the social distancing part first, there's no doubt that as we open up, there will be an increased number of cases, there will be increased hospitalizations, and there will be increased deaths. That is a 100% given. The question is, how much of that is acceptable? The deaths will be disproportionately those who are forced to work in unsafe conditions, those who live in congregate settings like nursing homes, prisons, etc. Those who hang out in big groups, they will get hit harder than that. We just have to, right now, it's like nobody's paying attention to this on a national level anymore, and it's like, originally we thought, oh, we're going to get by with, 40,000 deaths, and then 60,000, and now they're saying at least 100,000, and maybe it'll go up to 300,000, and nobody is really addressing how many deaths are acceptable, and I don't know what the answer to that is, but you have to realize that whatever we do to relax social distancing, at least initially throughout the country, because it will happen in local patterns. What will happen in any given location will depend upon, first of all, how many cases they have now and what their growth rate or their decrease rate is when they relax the social distancing. And really the question is, when they change the standards, how much is the reproductive number, what we call R-naught, going to change? If it stays hospitalizations will go up, but not exponentially. It will just raise to a new level that seems relatively controllable. But if the R naught gets higher than probably around 1.5, eventually we will be hitting exponential growth again. And the question is, when would that happen? Probably the soonest we'd see any signs of it are in about a month after we release social distancing. And you're not really going to see exponential growth take off in some places until 2 to 3 months. Similar to when we had the very first cases sneak into the United States back in early January, and yet we didn't see it becoming a problem until late March, early April. And so if we do this wrong, that's going to happen again, but we won't know it for 2 to 3 months, and as the government are paying really, really close attention.
Okay, KG7 GDB, continuing.
Yes, so that brings me to my other biggest concern, which is numbers. The government on every part, whether it's Democrats, White House, governors, you name it, everybody has been saying what they're using. Anybody who wants to get a COVID test should be able to get one, with results coming rapidly. They're getting much closer to that in many areas of the country, but the problem is all these new tests are rapidly introduced commercial tests that haven't been studied. And so, yeah, more and more people can get a test if they want one, but it doesn't tell you that it's an accurate test. As of late April, there were 61 different tests available to test for the active virus in the country, and yet only a few of those have actually been studied. We know that in the studies they've done, false negatives for doing, again, looking to the active infection, that's as high as 15%. And now we're adding spitting in a cup and swabbing saliva and doing all these different ways and doing all these rapid tests that turn around in just an hour or two, and none of these have been studied to tell us how accurate they really are. So this is not the antibody test, which we've already given bad news to. This is the basic COVID test, which has spread almost as fast as the virus, it seems like, and yet we don't know much about them. So what that means is if you get a COVID test and it's positive, you are infected, okay? But if your test is negative, you have no clue whether you're infected or not. If you have symptoms, you can assume you are infected, but you certainly shouldn't be using this test to say that, oh, no, this person doesn't have it, so they're safe to work, or they're safe to go out in the community, because there's too many false negatives. And so it makes a big problem, and they're starting to use the tests in this way to say, oh, well, we'll do COVID tests on everybody, you know, before they go to work, and if they're negative, then they're safe. No, at baseline, it's going to be 15% of the people that we're testing negative are going to actually be positive and therefore infectious. And so this incredible increase in testing has actually made most tests not all that valuable, particularly to tell you that you are safe that you're safe and safely not infected. And then the other part with that, as we've rapidly increased the tests, we are now looking at completely different populations. So now in some places they are testing, like I'm down in Los Angeles, and they say that anybody that wants to get tests can just schedule an appointment at a drive-up place. They don't have to have symptoms. They get no information about you. I don't know what tests they're using. But all of a sudden they're testing everybody, and that is not comparable to what we've done before. So if all of a sudden we have a bunch of positives, that doesn't tell me really that I have a higher rate of infection. It just tells me that I'm testing more people. And if we start testing more mild or asymptomatic people, we're also going to have a lower percent of the tests are going to be positive because we're testing a lot of people who aren't infected. And I actually saw a headline today that says Florida hits a new record low for positive results of COVID-19. Only 2.5% confirmed as infectious on Monday. But they drastically increased the number of patients that they were testing, including all kinds of asymptomatic people. So having social distancing at the same time that we've lost our best ability to track of what's going on with the infection. So, with that happy note, I'll open it for questions.
Kilo 7, Romeo Tango Lima. This is Rick with a question.
Okay, Rick, I got you on the list here. I got actually two more people in front of you, Rick, but I will put you on the list. Let me go down back over to, I have Jay first, who's going to do the first question here. Then we'll do Jeff, and then we'll do Rick there. Okay, so Jay first. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Brett. First of all, the audio is coming through really clear, so thanks for that. My question for the doctor is, has there ever been a cure or a vaccine for any of the different coronaviruses?
Okay, I'm going to repeat that. He said, has there ever been a cure or vaccine for any of the coronaviruses?
Okay. The answer is no. There has never been a cure or a vaccine for any of the coronaviruses. The most common coronaviruses are seasonal colds that we all get every year. Now, we haven't spent a lot of work on that because they're just annoying and don't really cause any problems, but there is no cure or vaccine that alters those in any way. There was some work on vaccines for the original SARS and for MERS, but they got better too quickly, and all the money for vaccines for those two coronavirus infections basically disappeared. So they never got it to an actual functional vaccine. However, they are using some of the research that they did on the original SARS and MERS for kind of a starting spot on this. So at least some places are not starting at ground zero. They're starting up a little bit in terms of research for finding a vaccine for this one. But no, there has never been a successful vaccine. There has also never been a successful treatment that has altered the course of any of the coronaviruses. Some of the medications that you see them playing with now are ones that were developed in response to SARS or MERS, but again, they were never really tested in those infections because they went away too quickly. So since they have to be out there floating around, we're now testing them. So far, the results are definitely not cure. Maybe in certain cases they will make it shorter, which is kind of when you ever took Tamiflu when you get influenza. We know if we give you this drug called Tamiflu, fairly quickly when you get true influenza, you'll probably be sick a few less days and maybe not as sick as you would otherwise be. And that's the best we've pretty much done for influenza. And so far, that's what the medications that are helping for COVID seems to be doing at best.
Okay, thank you. Good question. I'm going to move to Jeff now, KA7JLO. Jeff, go ahead.
Good evening, Dr. Sun. Glad to hear you on the air again. You may regard this as somewhat of a rhetorical question. However, I'm meaning this as a strategic question going forward. I'm really getting a sense that a lot of people are falling away from trust in the scientific community and anything coming down from official sources. You know, protests seem to be breaking out everywhere now. How does the science community win back the hearts and minds of the people?
Okay, I'm going to repeat that for her here. So Jeff asks that, you know, that in the light of the protests, it seems that people, you know, have lost faith in the science community, and is wondering what we can do to win back the hearts and minds of the people with regard to trusting scientists. So there you go. Let me get Rip, and you can answer that.
I thought I had the answer to that. I think I could solve a lot of problems. I think the major reasons people have fallen away from science, at least in our country, are twofold. Part of it is the current government that does not, has not in any way, shape, or form, you know, embraced science. There's been a lot of firing of scientists, decreasing of scientists on panels. You know, there's climate change, and I don't want to get into blame as much as just state that if you were to look at the amount of science involved in the United States government over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years, it has dropped drastically. I think another big part of it, however, is the use of the Internet and the way people talk to each other, and that's a known human psychology thing, that when people are given a lot of information, they automatically look for the stuff that confirms their view of events. So now that we have so much Internet information available, people don't actually analyze what they read anymore. They look for things that confirm what they already think. And that's always been the case. It's just with the Internet, it's much more available. And so that's something they're actually seeing worldwide, that and nobody really knows what to do with it. It's one of the big worries about how technology has taken over, is that people used to have their information funneled through them, through some process, through review of studies, through journalism, through a variety, their government, through whatever. And now that doesn't happen anymore. So everybody comments on everything, and people just go out and find what they want to find. And nobody really has a solution for that, and out of everything, that's the one I feel the most concerned about. All I can say is that I hope as time goes on and people see what happens with COVID, is that this may actually teach them to pay more attention to science. But there's a core group that, you know, and if it's them that die, they're not going to ever get it. And unfortunately, that's where the world is right now.
Okay, very good question again, very kind of philosophical, and but we'll find out as it goes. The one thing that we probably would like to say is that having been a scientist, it takes time to do good science, just like it takes time to build a house or to engineer a new device or to do anything. And you know, we want an answer today, now, and that isn't the way you do it. You know, you have to confirm your results, and that's what we're running into. Okay, so we have Rick. Sorry, you want to?
Hi. Even the things that I am telling you these things because as a scientist, I look at what's out there and I realize what's missing. And so instead of looking for the things that confirm what I think, I go, which pieces of the puzzle are missing? And then I try and go find the pieces of the puzzle so that I can put them together. But that takes scientific training to do that, and most people are not capable. So the example of what I gave you about the number of tests that are out there and the worries about false negatives being used to say people are safe to go to work and stuff, So there's little bits and pieces out there in the news reports and on the Internet, but to actually find out that, as of late April, there were 61 tests, that required me going to the FDA site and counting them. And then I had to go to the journals and look for the research of which ones have been tested or not. And yet a scientist writes that all down and puts it on the news, then they're labeled as being political. And so this is what you're getting from me, is you're getting a science perspective. But I don't know how to make other people appreciate that that's what scientists are doing.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Rick. Again, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We have Sheila Sund, MD, answering questions about COVID-19 here via audio-coupled speakerphone. Rick, K7RTL, go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you, and thanks for doing this, Dr. Sun. I wonder if you would comment on the reports that testing has shown more antibodies in individuals that were tested than expected, kind of hinting that there was a lot more non-symptomatic disease than what was expected. And then if that's credible at all, how that might affect our future with COVID-19.
Okay, here you go.
Okay. Everything that I said negative before about testing for the active infection, multiply that by, I don't know, 20 or 50 for antibody testing. Antibody testing, there have only been a few tests that have even gone through any review by the FDA as of this point in time. And yet there are, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, I can't even keep track of how many antibody tests are out there. The FDA made a decision back in March to allow a commercial entity to just tell them that they did their own testing and then the FDA would approve it. And so most of the tests out there for antibodies, that's what they are. You have a commercial entity that says, hey, we've done an antibody test, we tested it, and it works. But nobody's looking at those numbers. And as a result, we have had numbers all over the map. Some places get one antibody test, and it shows that 90% of the people have had it. And then you go somewhere else, and it shows that, you know, 3% of the people have had it. And what we really realize is that the antibody tests are really pretty bad. Even the ones that the FDA has done a little bit of review of their tests on are still not great. But the ones, most of the ones that are out there have had no external review of how good they are. And so as a result, the FDA just announced yesterday or today that they are going to require that everybody has an antibody test now provides at least some actual data to them about how well the tests will work. That would at least maybe move them into the range of 3 to 5% maybe false negatives. Yet there's still none of these tests are like tests you are used to from previous diseases where they have to be vetted extremely carefully. So I don't find most antibody tests helpful in any way, shape, or form unless I know specifically what the test is, that there is data published on how accurate it is, and that's almost not there. Pause. Okay, I do want to tell you about, however, one preliminary result of a good study that UC San Francisco just put out, and it's preliminary, so they haven't shared their data for any kind of peer review yet. But what they did is they went out and did testing in one 16-block area in San Francisco where they thought was likely to have a high number of cases based upon the type of people that live there and their exposures and things. And they ended up testing, they offered it to everybody. They ended up testing a little more than 50% of the people that live there. The other half refused for a variety of reasons, mostly being scared. They did both COVID tests for the active infection as well as an antibody test that they developed themselves and have published the results of. And by comparing the two of those, they found out that 2.1% of the people in this 16-block area of San Francisco were positive. That's not very high. They chose the area that they thought would have the highest level of infection in San Francisco, and they came up with 2.1% people positive. This was a pretty good test from their preliminary information. Again, until it's really out there, I can't tell that there's not some statistical error. But that goes along more with what we are thinking, the scientists are thinking, in that we are thinking that somewhere between 2% to 5% of the population has been infected. Based upon all the ways that you look at epidemiology, not based upon antibody testing. That makes sense?
Absolutely. Thank you. K7RTL.
W7RGM.
Okay, I got Reiner there, Whiskey 7, Romeo, Golf, Mike. Did did you just check in, or do you have a question?
Well, I had a question on the study she was just talking about.
Okay, go ahead, Reiner, with your question.
Well, I'm kind of wondering how much confirmation bias is affecting that very study because of the fact that they assume that this area, from whatever choices they made, would be a high COVID area. They may be completely wrong. I mean, just because you don't find an Easter egg doesn't mean there's a bunch of them in the lawn.
Okay, he's concerned, let me just make sure I get this right here, Reiner, that could there be bias in this setting as well? You know, could they have been biased about the weather, the initial guess that this was an area where there was a high COVID population? How do we really tell from this whether this was a good sample? Is that right, Reiner?
That's correct. I mean, you have to make assumptions to even get there, and really until the tests come back from a lot of other areas, you may completely miss the high COVID areas.
I agree completely, and actually UCSF, this was their first part of a much bigger study. They also did a study at the same time of a community that's kind of off by itself in California, which they guessed was going to have a low infectivity, and actually they didn't come up with any currently positive cases there. But again, these are preliminary results. And they chose to start here thinking that maybe, I mean, this is an area where in general people have high levels of poverty. They live, most people are living in at least three people or more in a house. Most of them are still actively working at essential jobs. So they used those things to choose this area, but they've readily admitted that this is just one area and they don't know whether it'll be the same. What I still like about this is that they actually checked their testing first. They tested they developed their tests based upon hospitalized patients at UCSF, which were definitely COVID patients. So their tests are about as accurate as you can get. Plus, they used their own tests, so they know the strengths and weaknesses of their tests. And I suspect, like most of the other studies that are being done from universities, that those will actually have been factored into their final statistics. So what I'm looking for when I try to find out what's really happening is I want a study that comes from a university that either is using a test that's been studied somewhere else or a test that they've studied themselves, so they know exactly how well it is, that they have some way of testing a large volume of people, and they're keeping track of who they don't test, in case acknowledging that that could be a bias, like in this case. There will only half the people agreed to do the test. And then I look for, do the numbers look consistent with what we would expect from other things we know about COVID at this point in time, what type of situations tend to make more infections, et cetera. And so this test is only one of what I hope to see, but this is what we actually need. If I could find 10 tests like this, meeting the same kind of study criteria done throughout the country, then I think we actually finally start to know how much COVID there really is out there. But most of them are not. Most of them are being done with random tests that are commercial tests. There's no information on how good the tests are. There's minimal information on how they choose how to test. So this is the closest to an active, good science study.
We timed out just a little bit. Let her repeat the last sentence.
Huh? Yes, I repeat it. So this is a good model for real research, the best that we've really seen in the United States yet. It's still only one study. We're going to need more details about this study and then a lot of similar studies before we're really going to know. But all this is, when I have that information, I will be confident that it's accurate, unlike anything else that I'm seeing out there right now.
RGM.
OK,
K6STX.
W7AVN.
KS7KP, I'm just checking in.
Okay, so a little bit fast for me there. Reiner, I want to move on because it's 7:36. We have other people that have questions. We can talk a little bit more about testing as we go. Let's see. Now, got a couple of people. Let's see. STX, you had a question. There were two check-ins. Can I come back with the people who haven't checked in yet?
Whiskey 7, India, Victor, November.
Seven, Kilo Papa Foxtrot.
And Kilo Echo 7, Alpha Sierra Mike.
And Kilo Foxtrot 7, Golf November.
Okay, great. Let me check you guys in. We had Ivan, Whiskey 7, India Victor November. Richard, Whiskey Zero, Echo Delta Foxtrot. I think Richard's going to record the thing session for us tonight. Tim, Kilo India 7, Kilo Papa Foxtrot. Doug, Kilo Echo 7, Alpha Zero. Mike and Scott, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Golf November. Okay, now I heard, STX had a question, so let's go to him next. Dan, go ahead.
Okay. This virus is now starting to affect a bunch of little guys coming up with something that's kind of weird, that looks a bit different. Has this virus been changing, or how is it that these little guys are coming up with something different that's not affecting the adults, and yet, you know, have something strange is happening to the little guys, so... is this thing morphing into something other than what it started to be?
Okay, let me make sure I got that right there for clarification. You said the little guys, you mean young people? It seems, and you asked the question, it seems like it's affecting young people more, or little guys, you mean children? Well, let's clarify that, and... then you asked if it had mutated. Is that your question?
Yeah, by little guys, I mean children. Children are coming up with these rashes and all kinds of different things that appears that it does not happen to the adults. So something has changed. And that's my question, yes.
Your heart. Other symptoms they have is they
rashes. They have abdominal discomfort, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, most of which sound pretty, you know, unusual, not all that weird for a kid to have. But then they develop this inflammation of their blood vessels that could, in rare cases, even be fatal. So far, there are not any reports of kids dying from this. And you have to realize that the total number of cases so far reported worldwide is probably in the 30 to 40 range. Now, maybe that now that people are looking for it, we'll have a lot of other people say, oh, yeah, no, we've seen that, too, and we've seen that, too, and we'll realize it's a real thing. But so far, we don't know that. I can say it's going to be relatively rare. You know, so it would be a rare pediatric disease happening right now. And not all the kids have even been positive for COVID-19, so we're not really sure whether this Kawasaki syndrome is caused by COVID-19. Some of them clearly are, but some of them are testing negative. Are those false negatives?
Through to everyone there?
Yep, roger, roger. Thank you.
Are there any other questions about kids as long as we're on that subject right now? Okay. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We've got the Emergency Preparedness Net with Sheila Sund, MD, answering your COVID-19 questions by telephone here. Any other questions for the doctor? Okay, there's Richard. Go ahead, please, with your question, and I'll repeat it again for the recording. I'm going to repeat it just for the recording here. So Richard is concerned about the what is reported in the news, and that he's asking about outliers. And he says that, for example, if we have 100 people who protest out of a state of 3 million people, you know, that gets on the news, but we don't hear about what the bulk of the people are doing, that they're all, you know, social distancing. Or we hear about a beach where, you know, people are protesting or having trouble or even, you know, behaving badly, and the rest of the beaches are fine. So what do you, I guess his take is, what do we do with news like this? And let me get a drip and let you answer the question.
Okay. So I do agree. Most of regarding protests, regarding news, regarding the outlier states and counties. I just think that those are outliers. Your most accurate data for what people are thinking are some of the reputable polling agencies, you know, like Pew and stuff. And if you can go to, you can go to reputable polling agencies that have a long history of good public polling. Some of them are doing this information, and what it shows is that the overwhelming majority of people in the United States are in favor of social distancing. Okay, and even the ones that are not in favor of social distancing, there is a political some identification with politics in that, but not as much as you see like with issues like abortion and immigration and things. So the very, very far right does seem to be more pushing for letting the social distancing going than many of the other Republicans who are actually still wanting to keep themselves safe. So I think as a nation, most people want themselves to be safe and want to continue doing social distancing, and that the protests and things are the outliers. However, the concern that I had is that we're also seeing a bit less coming from our government institutions from their scientists. And so we're seeing a little less from Washington as well as many of the states, not all the states, but many of the states, they're having less input publicly at least from their scientists. We have fewer scientific voices speaking up very publicly as we did before. And that worries me more than what the individuals are thinking, because if you don't have the scientists out there and talking where everybody can hear them and see them, then you will start to get a shift in what people know and believe. And so having less scientific voices out there is probably the thing that's bothering me the most right now.
Okay, this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Good question. Again, we have about 10 minutes left in our COVID-19 discussion, emergency preparedness net. Any other questions for the doctor? We do try to avoid turning into a political discussion, but it does seem that the news is shifts that way. We hear about all just the political side of things. But are there things in the news you might have seen? We did talk a little bit, maybe I can get Sheila to comment. We had questions this morning about Field Day, which is a traditional operation that, it's a social event, exercise for ham radio operators. And since we have ham radio operators on here, they're wondering, could we have a field day? Is there any way to have a safe field day? Sheila, do you want to go ahead and address that one?
I think that there may be a safe way to have a field day. Of course, I've never been to one, and I don't know exactly how you do it. But like everything else in the world right now, you have to look at how you do things and see if you can adjust them to meet the new safety requirements. So can you keep 6 foot distancing while you're doing your field day? That's the first thing. Obviously, it's field, so it's outdoors, and that's a real big positive for me. If you are outdoors and keeping 6 foot distancing, that makes me pretty happy about any airborne stuff. So then I only have to worry about what you guys touch. And if you're going to be touching other people's equipment, you have the best choice would be if there's some sort of disinfectant that you could use, that you can wipe off whatever it is that you're going to test, whether that's, knobs or antennas or something like that. My daughter had to work in a gym. She's a personal trainer, and she had to work in a gym up until mid-March, and she literally was walking around with a spray bottle of disinfectant cleaner and wipes, and she literally didn't touch anything in the gym. This is because I was paranoid since back in February. So for 3 weeks before she quit, she didn't touch anything in the gym without squirting it. She squirted doors before she walked in. She squirted equipment before she touched it. She squirted equipment before any of the customers touched it. She squirted equipment after they touched it. And so you have to know what you can. discreetly with your electronics, that I think that there should be ways to safely disinfect the surfaces that you might want to share in between users. And that's what I would recommend. And if you can do that and you keep 6 feet apart and you've got open air all around you, I think, yes, you could have your thing.
Okay, any other questions or comments about field day? Because that was a big discussion today. I guess we'll have to decide what the best way to clean electronics is. But so any other questions on the field day?
KE7GBK.
Yes, go ahead, John, with your question.
Well, I don't see how you could put up an antenna where you need two people to hold the mast when staying apart 6 feet doesn't seem very practical to me. I think that field day is out.
I'll repeat. Did you hear that? I'll repeat the question.
Okay,
I'll repeat his question. He says he doesn't see how you could put up an antenna and keep the 6 foot distance. So if you can't keep the 6 foot distance, he thinks the field day is out. Do you agree?
I don't know how long it takes to put up an antenna. I do believe, just like I believed before, that you have a COVID bubble or a cloud around you that's most dense in 3 feet and, you know, is less dense out to about 6 feet. But I also know that when you pass through somebody's cloud and you're only there briefly, there's not much chance that you're going to inhale a virus to do any harm. However, you're going to have to hang out in somebody's cloud. We know the longer you spend there, the bigger the problem is going to be. So I need to know more about, like, how close you have to be to each other. You know, if you can be next to each other within the 3 to 6 foot range for, you know, a few minutes at a time, that might be okay. If you're going to be hanging out 3 feet from each other for 15 minutes while you're putting up an antenna, probably not so much. And again, I don't know enough about your logistics to know whether that's possible or not.
Okay, so another question that we had had today was about the idea of logging. As typically, you have two people that would sit in front of a table together. One person would be, you know, operating the radio, and the other person would be sitting close by, listening to the, just like we're listening right now, and then writing down the information from the people as they exchange their for the contest. So there's a team of people working side by side at a table. Again, that was a question, and did the same rules apply here, Sheila?
Same rules would apply. If you're sitting outside, you should still be 6 feet apart. The question would be, first of all, can the radio be loud enough that, you know, both people can hear it, the one that's writing it down as well as the one that's working it? The second one would be, could you do something like you're doing right now with me, where somebody's telling you something, you're repeating it back, and clearly somebody that's sitting 6 feet away from you could hear you repeat it back and log it. And so, again, it's requiring some creative thinking, but to me, I mean, I don't know how fast this stuff comes in. Is it coming in so quickly that you don't have a chance to repeat it? But if it's coming in slow enough that you could repeat it out loud, then you have one person 6 feet away that writes down what you say, basically giving dictation.
Okay, thank you.
KE7 ASM.
Okay, Doug, KE7 ASM, go ahead with your question.
Not necessarily a question, but if I remember right, in the last 30 days, the ARRL had some words in a newsletter concerning this situation. I highly suggest that we might want to take a look at those words and see what they say and see if it can complies with what the doctor recommends. But there was some words by the ARRL on the end of June exercise. So, reference that, and maybe that'll give us some guidance. KE7 ASM, back to net.
Okay, good.
Looking for other people's guidelines.
Yes, that's what he was saying. Look at the ARRL guidelines. That's our thing. Do you have a comment on that?
Can I comment on that? always, you want to look for guidelines. I forget, I'm not a ham radio person, but yes, if you have larger professional organizations, there's a reasonable likelihood that somebody somewhere is trying to figure out how to do this, safely. Now, that doesn't mean you should find somebody else's guidelines and say, yes, somebody else figured it out, we're just going to do it. You should look at their guidelines and see if it makes sense with everything else you know, because, everybody's winging this somewhat. But particularly if you're kind of a professional organization, that is a good place to start. And that leads into something, again, that's kind of interesting with how Oregon is approaching how they're going to open up Oregon. And that is that Governor Brown has created little small subcommittees pretty much for every type of business out there. And the subcommittee are developing recommendations for their type of business that says how they think they can do it safely. So tomorrow, supposedly it's going to come out in written form tomorrow, but the preliminary thing that I heard about Oregon restaurants and bars, that their subcommittee recommendations are that they are going to separate customers by at least 6 feet, that they will close by 10 p.m., the restaurant staff will wear masks, they will disinfect tables and menus between each customer, they will minimize bare hand contact with food through the use of utensils. Anything that's self-service, like a buffet or a salad bar, will be prohibited. You can sit at a counter as long as the counter faces a window or a wall and does the six-foot setting. So this is actually what the Restaurant Association in Oregon is coming up with on their very own. And then they're presenting it to the governor and saying, hey, does this meet the requirements? And then she's looking at it with public health. And that is really what we want, because only the people that are in a business know enough about their business to come up with their own recommendations. They just need to be reviewed outside. And so I'm kind of excited about that approach.
Yeah, I just lost you. Just said that would work for radio too there. Yes, Richard, go ahead with your comment.
I fall on the side of places where your disease is under control, that you should be reopening things in steps, but doing it safely, not just for the customers, but for the workers. And I honestly had always figured that's what we would do, that we would have to shut down everything quickly because it was out of control, and that we would use the time that we were shut down on how to see what could be reopened safely. And so that safety has to be both safe for the workers as well as safe for the customers. And so any business that has figured out a way to open and still meet those safety criteria, I am very much in favor of that. I am not in favor of just saying, yeah, this has gone on long enough, let's just open it up. And I think that the way that the businesses have to control things has to be based upon science, including concerns about aerosol or airborne infection. But if you can do that, yeah, we should be starting to slowly but surely opening things up.
Okay, let's see, it's 8 o'clock, just about out of time here. Is there any final quick questions for the doctor about COVID-19 here? Okay, very good. Well, it's a good session tonight. The time is now 8:01 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Again, there will be a recording available of today's session on the WA7ABUgroups.io page, which you can get from the main WA7ABU.com webpage. And I think Richard is going to provide that for us, so that's great. This net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go out to Dan WA7ABU for the use of the repeater. Thank you to our guest again, Sheila Sund, MD. On the telephone there, and thank you to all who participated and those who stood by to give us a clear channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now at 8:02 p.m. We will return the repeater to normal undirected amateur operations. KG7 GDB, be safe. I'm clear.